levels shot up by 49.5%. The normal range for IgA is from 37 to 87 milligrams per deciliter, mg/dL, with some people measured more than 100 mg/dL at the end of the workshop. Our test subjects showed significant, measurable, epigenetic changes without having any significant experiences in their external environment. By attaining states of elevated emotions even for just a few days, their bodies began to believe that they were in a new environment, so they were able to signal new genes and change their genetic expression, in this case, the protein expression of the immune system. See figure 2.4. This means that you might not need a pharmacy or an exogenous substance to heal you. You have the power from within to upregulate the genes that make IgA within a few days. Something as simple as moving into an elevated state of joy, love, inspiration, or gratitude for 5 to 10 minutes a day can produce significant epigenetic changes in your health and body. Where attention goes, energy flows. Since where you place your attention is where you place your energy, when you wake up in the morning and immediately start putting your attention and energy on all the people you have to see that day, the places you have to go, the objects you own and the things you have to do in the three-dimensional world, your energy becomes fractured. All of your creative energy is flowing away from you, as figure 2.5 illustrates, to all things in the outer world that compete for your attention: your cell phone, your laptop, your bank account, your house, your job, your coworkers, your spouse, your kids, your enemies, your pets, your medical conditions, and so on. Take a glance at figure 2.5. It is obvious that most people's attention and energy are directed to their outer material world. It begs the question, how much energy do you have left in your inner world of thoughts and feelings to create a new reality? Consider for a moment that each of these people or things you give so much attention to is a known in your life because you've experienced it. As I mentioned earlier in the chapter, you have a neurological network in your brain for each one of those things. Since they are mapped in your brain, you perceive and so experience them from your past. And the more you keep experiencing them, the more automatic and enriched the neural circuits for each of them become, because the redundancy of the various experiences keeps assembling and refining more and more circuits. That's what experience does. It enriches the brain. So you have a neurological network about your boss, a neurological network about money, a neurological network about your partner, a neurological network about your kids, a neurological network for your financial situation, a neurological network for your house, and neurological networks about all your physical world possessions, because you've experienced all of those people or things at different times and places. When your attention and therefore your energy is divided between all these outer world objects, people, problems, and issues, there's no energy left for you to put on your inner world of thoughts and feelings. So there's no energy left for you to use to create something new. Why? Because how you think and how you feel literally creates your personal reality. Therefore, if you are thinking and feeling equal to everything that you know, that's the known, you keep reaffirming the same life. In fact, we could say that your personality is no longer creating your personal reality. Now your personal reality is creating your personality. Your external environment is controlling your thoughts and feelings. There's a biological match between your inner world of thoughts and feelings and your outer world, past, present reality made of people and objects at certain times and places. You are continuously keeping your life the same because you are keeping your attention, thoughts, and your energy, feelings, the same. Finally, if how you think and how you feel broadcasts an electromagnetic signature that influences every area of your life, you are broadcasting the same electromagnetic energy and your life never changes. We could say that your energy is equal to everything in your past, present reality, and you are recreating the past. That's not the only limitation that occurs, though. When you place all your attention and energy on the outer world and you keep reacting to the same conditions in the same way, in a state of chronic stress which causes the brain to be in a constant state of arousal, your inner world becomes imbalanced and your brain begins to work inefficiently. And then you become less effective in creating anything at all. In other words, you become a victim of your life instead of the creator of your life. Living by the hormones of stress. Now let's take a closer look at how we end up getting addicted to our negative emotions, or more precisely, what we call the hormones of stress. The moment we react to any condition in our outer world that tends to be threatening, whether the threat is real or imagined, our body releases stress hormones in order to mobilize enormous amounts of energy in response to that threat. When this occurs, the body moves out of balance. That's exactly what stress is. This is a natural and healthy response, because in antiquity, that chemical cocktail of adrenaline and cortisol and similar hormones were released when we were facing some danger in the outer world. Maybe a predator was chasing us, for example, and we had to make a decision to fight, run, or hide. When we are in survival mode, we automatically become materialists, defining reality with our senses, by what we can see, hear, smell, feel, and taste. We also narrow our focus and put all of our attention on matter, on our bodies existing in a particular space and time. The hormones of stress cause us to give all of our attention to our outer world because that's where the danger lurks. Back in the days of early humans, of course, this response was a good thing. It was adaptive. It kept us alive. And once we had focused our attention on the cause, and then the danger had passed, the levels of all those stress hormones went back into balance. But in modern times, that's no longer the case. After just one phone call or email from our boss or a family member that elicits a strong emotional reaction such as anger, frustration, fear, anxiety, sadness, guilt, suffering, or shame, we turn on the primitive fight-or-flight nervous system, causing us to react as if we were being chased by a predator. The same chemistry automatically stays switched on because the external threat never seems to go away. The truth is that many of us spend the majority of our time in this state of heightened arousal. It's become chronic. It's as though the predator is not out there in the wild making an occasional toothy appearance, but is instead living in the same cave as we are. A toxic coworker whose desk is right next to ours, for example. Such a chronic stress response is not adaptive. It's maladaptive. When we're living in survival mode and those hormones of stress like adrenaline and cortisol keep pumping through our body, we stay on high alert instead of returning to balance. As in Anna's experience in Chapter 1, when this imbalance is maintained long-term, chances are we are headed for disease, because long-term stress downregulates the healthy expression of genes. In fact, our bodies become so conditioned to this rush of chemicals that they become addicted to them. Our bodies actually crave them. In this mode, our brains become overly alert and aroused as we try to predict, control, and force outcomes in an effort to increase our chances of survival. And the more we do this, the stronger the addiction becomes, and the more we believe we are our bodies, connected to our identities and our environment, living in a linear time. That's because that's where all of our attention is. When your brain is aroused and you are living in survival mode, and you have to keep shifting your attention to your job, to the news, to your ex, to your friends, to your emails, to Facebook, and to Twitter, you're activating each of these different neurological networks very quickly. Review figure 2.5. If you keep doing this over time, the act of habitually narrowing your focus and shifting your attention compartmentalizes your brain, and it no longer works in a balanced fashion. And when that happens, you are training your brain to fire in a disordered, incoherent pattern which causes it to work very inefficiently. Like a lightning storm in the clouds, different neural networks fire out of order so your brain works out of sync. The effect is similar to a group of drummers all banging on their skins at the same time, but not together or with any rhythm. We will talk much more about the concepts of coherence and incoherence in a later chapter, but for now, it's enough to know that when your brain gets incoherent, you get incoherent. When your brain isn't working optimally, you're not working optimally. For each outer world person or thing or place you've experienced in your life that is a known, you have an emotion connected to it because emotions, which are energy and motion, are the chemical residue of experience. And if most of the time you're living by those addictive stress hormones, you might use your boss to reaffirm your addiction to judgment. You might use your coworkers to reaffirm your addiction to competition. You might use your friends to reaffirm your addiction to suffering. You might use your enemies to reaffirm your addiction to hatred. Your parents to reaffirm your addiction to guilt. Your Facebook feed to reaffirm your addiction to insecurity, the news to reaffirm your addiction to anger, your ex to reaffirm your addiction to resentment, and your relationship with money to reaffirm your addiction to lack. This means your emotions, your energy, are commingled, even bonded with every person, place, or thing you experience in your known familiar reality. And that means there's no energy available for you to create a new job, a new relationship, a new financial situation, a new life, or even a newly healed body. Let me say it another way. If how you think and how you feel determines the frequency and information you are emitting in your energy field, which has a significant effect on your life, and if all of your attention, and so all of your energy, is tied up with your outer world of people, objects, things, places, and time, there's no energy left in your inner world of thoughts and feelings. Therefore, the stronger the emotion you are addicted to, the more you will place your attention on that person, object, place, or circumstance in your outer world, giving away most of your creative energy in causing you to feel and think equal to everything you know. It becomes difficult to think or feel in any new ways when you are addicted to your outer world. And it's possible that you can become addicted to all the people and things in your life that are causing you all the problems in the first place. That's how you give your power away and mismanage your energy. If you review figure 2.5, you'll find a few examples to illustrate how we create energetic bonds to all of the elements in our outer world. Take a look at figure 2.6. On the left side of the diagram, you see two atoms bound by an invisible field of energy. They're sharing information. It's energy that is bonding them together. On the right side of the diagram, you see two people who are sharing an experience of resentment and who are also bonded by an invisible field of energy that keeps them connected energetically. In truth, they are sharing the same energy, and so the same information. To separate the two atoms, it takes energy. By the same means, if your attention and energy are bound to the same people, places, and things in the outside physical world, you can understand that it's going to take energy and effort to break those bonds when you're in meditation. This begs the question, how much of your creative energy is tied up in guilt, hatred, resentment, lack, or fear? The truth is, you could be using all that energy to recreate a new destiny. To do that, you're going to have to get beyond all those things in your outer world by taking your attention off them. That's why we use meditation as the model to change our internal state. This allows us to break from our associations to everybody, everyone, everything, everywhere, and every time, long enough to journey within. Once you overcome your emotional body and you take your attention off everything known to you in your outer world, you call your energy back to you, breaking the bonds with your past-present reality, which has been staying the same. You're going to have to make the transition from being somebody to being nobody, which means you have to take your attention off your body, your pain, and your hunger. You're going to have to go from being someone to being no one, taking your attention off your identity as a partner, parent, and an employee. You'll have to go from keeping your attention on something to placing your attention on no thing, forgetting all about your cell phone, your emails, and getting a cup of coffee. And from being somewhere to being nowhere, getting beyond any thoughts about the chair you're meditating in or where you'll be going later today, and from being in linear time to being in no time, with no distracting memories or thoughts about the future. I'm not saying that your cell phone or your laptop or your car or your bank account is bad, but when you're overly attached to those things and they've captured your attention to such a degree that you can't get beyond thinking about them because of the strong emotions you associate with them, those possessions own you, and then you can't create something new. The only way to do that is to learn to call all of that fractured energy back so you can overcome the emotions of survival that you have become addicted to and that keep all of your energy bound to your past-present reality. Once you take your attention off all those exterior elements, you start to weaken your energetic and emotional bonds with those things, and you finally begin to free up enough available energy to create a new future. That's going to require you to become aware of where you've been unconsciously placing your attention, and, like separating the two atoms, it's also going to take some energy to consciously break those bonds. People come up to me all the time in workshops and tell me their computer hard drive crashed, or someone stole their car, or they lost their job and they don't have any more money. When they tell me they have lost people or things in their life, you know what I always say to them? Great. Look how much available energy you now have to design a new destiny. By the way, if you do this work well and manage to call your energy back to you, it will most likely be uncomfortable at first, even a little chaotic. Get ready, because certain areas of your life may fall apart. But don't worry. That's supposed to happen because you're breaking the energetic bonds between yourself and your same past reality. Anything that is no longer in a vibrational match between you and your future is going to fall away. Let it. Don't try to put your old life back together because you're going to be way too busy with the new destiny you're calling to yourself. Here's a great example. A friend of mine who was vice president of a university showed up for a board meeting about 3 weeks after he started doing this meditation work. He was the backbone of that university. The students and faculty loved him. He walked into the board meeting and sat down, and they fired him. So he called me and he said, "Hey, I don't know if this meditation process is working. The board just fired me. Aren't great things supposed to happen to me when I'm doing the work?" "Listen," I told him, "don't you hold on to those emotions of survival, because then you'll be in your past. Instead, keep finding the present moment and creating from that place." Within 2 weeks, he fell in love with a woman he later married. He also soon received an offer for an even better job as vice president of a much larger and better university, which he gratefully accepted. A year later, he called me again to tell me that the college that fired him was now asking him to return as president. So, you never know what the universe has in store for you as your old reality falls away and your new one begins to unfold. The only thing I can assure you of is this: the unknown has never let me down. Calling your energy back. If you're going to disconnect from the outer world, you have to learn how to change your brainwaves. So let's talk about brainwave frequencies for a moment. Most of the time that you're awake and conscious, you are in the beta range of brainwave frequencies. Beta is measured in low range, medium range, and high range frequencies. Low range beta is a relaxed state when you don't perceive any threats from the outer world, but you are still aware of your body in space and time. This is the state you are in when you are reading, paying attention to your daughter during a friendly conversation, or listening to a lecture. Mid-range beta is slightly more aroused state, such as when you are in a group of people, introducing yourself to everyone for the first time and you have to remember everyone's name. You're more vigilant, but you're not overly stressed or completely out of balance. Think of mid-range beta as good stress. High-range beta is the state you're in when you're jacked up on the hormones of stress. There are the brain waves you display when you exhibit any of the survival emotions, including anger, alarm, agitation, suffering, grief, anxiety, frustration, or even depression. High-range beta can be more than 3 times higher than low-range beta and twice as high as mid-range beta. While you may spend most of your waking time in beta frequency brainwaves, you also dip into alpha frequency brainwaves throughout your day. You display alpha brainwaves when you are relaxed, calm, creative, and even intuitive, when you're no longer thinking or analyzing and instead you're daydreaming or imagining, like a trance state. If beta brainwaves indicate where you are placing the majority of your attention on your outer world, alpha brainwaves indicate when you are placing more of your attention on your inner world. Theta frequency brainwaves take over in the twilight stage when your mind is still awake, but your body is drifting off to sleep. This frequency is also associated with deep states of meditation. Delta frequency brainwaves usually come during deep, restorative sleep. However, over the last 4 years, my research team and I have recorded several students who can move into very deep delta brainwaves during meditation. Their bodies are deeply asleep, and they're not dreaming, but their brain scans show that their brains are processing very high amplitudes of energy. As a result, they report having profound mystical experiences of oneness, feeling connected to everyone and everything in the universe. See figure 2.7 to compare the different brainwave states. Gamma frequency brainwaves indicate what I call a superconscious state. This high frequency energy occurs when the brain gets aroused from an internal event. One of the most common examples is during meditation when your eyes are closed and you are going within, instead of an event that happens outside the body. We'll talk more about gamma brainwaves in later chapters. One of the biggest challenges people have when they meditate is switching out of high range and even mid-range beta and slipping into alpha and then theta brainwave frequencies. It's absolutely vital to do so, though, because when they slow down their brainwaves to these other frequencies, they are no longer paying attention to the outer world and all the distractions they're so used to thinking about when they're under stress. And since they're not analyzing and strategizing, trying to prepare for the worst-case scenario in their future based on their fearful memories of the past, they have the opportunity to become present, to exist only in the now. Wouldn't it be wonderful during a meditation to disconnect your association to all the elements in your outer environment, to get beyond your body, your fears, and your schedule, and forget about your familiar past and your predictable future? If you do it right, you will even lose track of time. As you overcome your automatic thinking, your emotions, and your habits in meditation, that is exactly what happens. You get beyond your body, your environment, and time. You weaken the energetic bonds with your past-present reality and find yourself in the present moment. Only in the present moment can you call your energy back to you. This does take some effort, although it will get easier with practice, because you're living by the hormones of stress most of the time. So let's look at what happens when you aren't in the present moment during meditation so you'll know how to handle that when it arises. Understanding this skill is important because if you can't get beyond your stresses, your problems, and your pain, you can't create a new future where those things don't exist. So let's say you're sitting in your meditation and you start to have some stray thoughts. You're in the habit of thinking that way because you've been thinking the same way and putting your attention on the same people and things at the same time and place for years now. And you have been automatically embracing the same familiar feelings on a daily basis just to reaffirm the same personality that's connected to your same personal reality, repeatedly conditioning your body into the past. The only difference now is that because you're trying to meditate, your eyes are shut. As you are sitting there with your eyes closed, you are not physically seeing your boss. But your body wants to feel that anger because every time you see her in your waking day, 50 times a day, 5 days a week, you are in the habit of feeling bitterness or aggression. Similarly, when you get emails from her, which happen at least 10 times a day, you unconsciously have the same emotional reaction to her. So your body has grown accustomed to needing her to reaffirm your addiction to anger. It wants to feel the emotions it has become addicted to, and like an addict craving a drug, the body is craving the familiar chemicals. It wants to feel that familiar anger at your boss because you didn't get the promotion, or it wants to feel judgment about your coworker who always wants you to cover for him. Then you start thinking about other colleagues who annoy you and other reasons to be upset with your boss. You're sitting there trying to meditate, but your body is throwing the kitchen sink at you. That's because it wants its chemical fix or familiar emotions that you normally feel throughout the waking day with your eyes open. The instant you notice what's happening, that you are putting all of your attention on that emotion, you become aware that you're investing your energy into the past, because emotions are records of the past. So you stop and return to the present moment and you begin to disinvest your attention and energy out of the past. And then, in a little while, you start to feel frustrated and angry and resentful again, and you realize what you are doing. You remember that your body is trying to feel those emotions in order to reaffirm its addiction to those chemicals. And you remember that those emotions drive your brain into high-range beta brainwaves. And you stop. Every time you pause, settle your body down, and return to the present moment, you are telling your body that it is no longer the mind. You are the mind. But then thoughts start drifting into your mind about the people you have to see and the places you have to go and the things you have to do later that day. You wonder if your boss has answered that email yet, and you remember that you haven't returned your sister's phone call either. And today is trash day, so you remind yourself you need to put out the trash. And all of a sudden you become aware that by anticipating those future scenarios, you are investing your attention and your energy into the same known reality. So you stop, return to the present moment, and once more disinvest your energy out of that predictable, known future and make room for the unknown in your life. Take a look at figure 2.8. It shows that once you find yourself in that sweet spot of the generous present moment, your energy, represented by the arrows, no longer goes away from you to the past and future the way it did back in figure 2.3. Now you are divesting your energy from that familiar past and predictable future. You are no longer firing and wiring the same circuits in the same way, and you are no longer regulating and signaling the same genes in the same way by feeling the same emotions. If you keep doing this process, you are continuously calling all that energy back to you by breaking the energetic bonds that keep you connected to your past-present reality. This happens because you are taking your attention and your energy off your outer world and placing it instead on your inner world, and you're building your own electromagnetic field surrounding your body. Now you have available energy that you can use to create something new. Not surprisingly, your attention eventually begins to wander again. As you continue to sit in meditation, your body becomes more annoyed and impatient because it wants to do something. After all, you've programmed it every day to get up and follow the same routine. It wants to quit meditating, open its eyes and see someone. It wants to hear something on TV or talk to someone on the phone. It prefers to taste breakfast instead of sitting there doing nothing. It would like to smell coffee brewing, like it does every morning, and it would love to feel something like a hot shower before it starts the day. The body wants to experience physical reality with its senses in order to embrace an emotion. But your goal is to create a reality from a world beyond your senses that's defined not by your body as the mind, but by you as the mind. So as you become aware of the program, you keep settling your body down into the present moment. The body tries again to return to the familiar past because it wants to engage in a predictable future, but you keep settling it back down. Each time you overcome those automatic habits, your will becomes greater than your program. Every time you keep settling your body back to the present moment, like training a dog to sit, you are reconditioning your body to a new mind. Each time you become aware of your program and you labor for the present moment, you are stating that your will is greater than your program. And if you keep returning your attention, and therefore your energy, back to the present moment, and you keep noticing when you are present and when you are not, sooner or later your body is going to surrender. It is this process of continuously returning to the present moment every time you become aware that you've lost it that begins to break the energetic bonds with your familiar known reality. And when you do return to the present moment, what you're actually doing is getting beyond your physical world identity and unfolding into the quantum field, a concept I will explain in detail in the next chapter. The hardest part of every war is the last battle. That means that when your body, as the mind, is raging, causing you to think that you cannot go any further, wanting you to stop and return to the world of the senses, you keep persevering. You truly step into the unknown, and sooner or later you will begin to break the emotional addiction within you. When you get beyond your guilt, your suffering, your fear, your frustration, your resentment, or your unworthiness, you are freeing your body from the chains of those habits and emotions that keep you anchored in the past. And as a result, you are liberating energy that is now coming back to you. As the body releases all of this stored emotional energy, it is no longer becoming the mind. You discover that right on the other side of your fear is courage. Right on the other side of your lack is wholeness. And just beyond your doubt is knowing. When you step into the unknown and surrender your anger or hatred, you discover love and compassion. It's the same energy. It has just been stored in the body, and now it's available for you to use to design a new destiny. So when you learn to overcome yourself, or the memory of yourself and your life, you break the bonds you have with everything, every person, every place, and every time that's keeping you connected to your past-present reality. And when you finally overcome your anger or your frustration, and you liberate energy that was trapped in the past, you call that energy back to you. As you liberate all of that creative energy that has been tied up in those survival emotions, within you and all around you, you are building your own personal energy field around your body. In our advanced workshops, we've actually measured this effect on calling the energy back. We have experts who use very sensitive equipment called a gas discharge visualization, GDV, machine, with a specially designed sensor called a Sputnik antenna, developed by Konstantin Korotkov, PhD. It measures the ambient electromagnetic field in the workshop conference spaces to see how the energy changes as the workshop progresses. On the first full day of some of our advanced workshops, we sometimes see the energy in the room drop. That happens because once we start meditating, and those students have to overcome themselves by breaking the energetic bonds with everyone and everything in their known reality, they are calling energy back to themselves. They're drawing energy from the greater field, and the field in the room can diminish as the participants begin to build their individual field of energy around their own bodies. And now they have available energy to use to design a new destiny. Of course, as our entire group gets beyond themselves the first day, they finally build their own light field, and as their energy keeps expanding each day, they begin to contribute to the energy in the room. As a result, we finally witness the energy of the room rise. To see what this sometimes looks like, find graphics 1A and 1B in the color insert. One way to increase your chances of a successful meditation is to give yourself enough time so you don't get distracted by trying to rush through the experience. When I meditate, for example, I allow for 2 hours. I don't have to take 2 hours every time, but I know myself well enough by now to realize that if I have only 1 hour, I'm going to tell myself there's not enough time. If I have 2 hours, on the other hand, I can relax, knowing I have plenty of time to find the present moment. Some days I find the sweet spot of the present moment pretty quickly, while on other days I have to work for an hour at bringing my brain and body back into the present. I'm a very busy person. Some days when I have just arrived home for 3 days between workshops or events, I wake up in the morning and immediately think of the 3 meetings I have planned that day with different staff members, mentally rehearsing what I have to talk about. Then I think about the emails I have to get done before I go to those meetings. Then I think about the flight I have to catch that afternoon. Then I make a mental note about the phone calls I have to make on the drive to the airport. You get the idea. As that happens and I'm thinking about the same people I have to see, the same places I have to go, the same things I have to do, all at the same time in my known familiar reality, I realize that I am priming my brain and body to look like that future has already happened. I become conscious that my attention is in the known future, and I stop anticipating the known and turn back to the present moment. As I do that, I'm beginning to unfire and unwire those neural connections. Then I might get a little emotional and become impatient and a little frustrated thinking about something that happened yesterday. And since emotions are a record of the past and where I place my attention is where I place my energy, I become aware that I'm investing my energy in the past. Then the hormones of stress may get my brain aroused and my body gets a bit fired up into high-range beta brainwaves, and I have to settle it back down into the present moment again. And as I do that, I'm no longer firing and wiring the same circuits in my brain, and I'm disinvesting my energy out of the past. And if I'm aware of the same thoughts that are connected to those same familiar feelings, when I stop myself from feeling the same way, I'm no longer conditioning my body into the past, and I'm no longer signaling the same genes in the same ways. And if the emotions are the end products of experiences in the environment, and if it's the environment that signals the gene, then when I stop feeling those same emotions, I'm no longer selecting and instructing the same genes in the same ways. That not only affects the health of my body, but also no longer primes my body to be in the same future based on living in the past. So as I inhibit those familiar feelings, I'm changing the genetic program of my body. And since the hormones of long-term stress downregulate the expression of healthy genes and create disease, every time I am able to stop when I catch myself feeling any of those emotions that are related to stress, I am no longer conditioning my body to stay addicted to the emotions of stress. If I do it properly, overcoming my familiar thoughts and emotions of my known past and future, then energetically, neurologically, biologically, chemically, hormonally, and genetically, that predictable future, as well as the familiar past I used to affirm it, no longer exists. If I am no longer firing and no longer wiring those same old neural networks, by no longer thinking about those memories of the people or things at certain times and places, and I keep returning to the present moment, I am calling energy back to me. Take a look at figure 2.9 and you can see how the familiar past and the predictable future no longer exist. Now I'm in the sweet spot of the generous present moment, and I have available energy to create. I've built my own energy field surrounding my body. Every time I've labored, sometimes for hours, to get beyond myself and find that place called the eternal now, and I truly break through, I've always thought the same thing. That was so worth it. Chapter 3. Tuning into new potentials in the quantum. Getting beyond our body, our environment, and time isn't easy. But it's worth it because once we disconnect from three-dimensional reality, we enter a whole other reality called the quantum, the realm of infinite possibility. Describing this reality is a bit challenging because it's unlike anything we are familiar with in the physical universe. The rules of Newtonian physics, the way we are used to thinking the world works, simply don't apply. The quantum, or unified field, is an invisible field of energy and information, or you could say a field of intelligence or consciousness, that exists beyond space and time. Nothing physical or material exists there. It's beyond anything you can perceive with your senses. This unified field of energy and information is what governs all the laws of nature. Scientists have been working to quantify this process so we can more fully understand it, and they are discovering more and more all the time. Based on my knowledge and experience, I believe there's a self-organizing intelligence that is energy, and it is observing all of the universes and galaxies into order. Sometimes people will say to me that this idea seems a bit unscientific. I always answer them with the same question. What happens after an explosion? Order or disorder? Their answer is always that disorder results.